Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Nothing tastes as good as a cup of Bahamian tea.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.
You are listening to the podcast Tea and Talk, presented to inform, educate, inspire, and encourage meaningful conversations on Bahamian art and culture. My name is Robert Bain, dancer, teacher, choreographer, and someone who believes in the preservation of all things Bahamian. I am sitting down with persons of like mind to discuss the Bahamian perspective on the arts and the Bahamian way. Now, let's welcome our guest.
Well, good. What today is? Today's the 24th of July. Boy, this month just slipping by like crazy. Well, this is Robert Bain with another podcast, and this podcast is emanating from the beautiful island of New Providence, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We boast of 700 of them. They're beautiful islands. We love life and we live life. It's a beautiful country, and you are welcome. You can always come and visit us. We would enjoy your company. We have lots of things happening here, you know, culturally. We're just a beautiful place, and the people here in the Bahamas are beautiful people. So be assured, you come here, you got it. It's going to be wonderful. The reason we, you know, I like to start off by saying to people why we did Tea and Talk, you know. Well, you know, it was really established to create a platform for persons in the arts. Because, you know, I'm an artist, but I figured the best thing to do is try and help myself and help my friends and stuff like that. But anyhow, it gives us a platform that we could talk about whatever we feel like. We could talk about the things that empowers us, or we can talk about the things that impedes our progress. But, you know, at the end of the podcast, I hope that everybody listening to it will be a bit smarter, right? So today is a special podcast. All podcasts are special. And today I'm happy to have a friend by the name of Calvin Cooper. And I've known Calvin for, a little while. I remember him being a student and I guess needing my inputs on some of the things that he was doing, his papers and stuff like that. And it was a pleasure to actually do that. But he's here. And quite an interesting thing he does. And he does this thing called restorative wellness. And I'm quite interested in hearing about what that's all about. I know it has something to do with education. He's also a dancer. But he'll tell you about himself. Calvin, welcome to Tea and Talk, man.
Thank you, and thank you for being here. I'm very honored to be in this space. Actually, almost a little nervous, but
that's all right,
looking
man.
Forward to
that's all right, man.
Having this conversation with you.
Yeah. Well, tell us about Calvin. Who's Calvin, man? Who's Calvin Cooper, man?
Oh man, that's a loaded one. Right. So, I'm one who grew up in the Bahamas. Left here many years ago, took a year after high school to do some work, and then went to Minneapolis Community College, where my sister and her family was, and then from there, Went to undergrad school in New Jersey doing psychology and then doing dance. My sister was one of the ones who inspired me to go into dance and theater. She's a therapist, and she was one saw me doing performances at the community college in Minnesota and like asked me, is there a reason I'm not going for dance and theater? You know, because I was going for psychology. So she was the one who sit me down because I was like, come on, I can't tell mom and dad I'm going after dance and theater. And then she's like, okay, we need to talk. How old are you? You know, so she did that conversation sitting down with me. And that was the first time I decided, let me go for, you know, what I really wanted. So did that process, finished off undergrad, did the starving artists in New York for a while, got involved in the church and leadership, International Church of Christ. They had a performing arts ministry. I moved to New York. And that's where most of it started. And while I was teaching and performing at various different places, that's when I decided I wanted to go back to school because I wasn't getting the payment I was looking for. And I realized that having a grad, a degree in education was going to help me with the dance therapy aspect that I was pursuing, pretty much trying to combine performing with psychology, with human behavior. And that's where the restorative wellness came about.
That's awesome, buddy. I like to tell people there are Bahamians out there doing a lot of stuff. Kelvin, you are a professor and chairman of the Health and Physical Education and Recreation Department at Bronx Community College.
Yeah, that's correct. I just finished the chair position. I just ended it just this summer. So I'm looking, I did that for a while. I knew it was only something I wanted to do for a short period or for that particular session because it was not something I wanted to do begin with. But because of my, my expertise in certain areas, they had pushed me into that position and I decided, you know what, let me strategize and do it because it was needed at the time. But prior to that, I was associate professor in the Health Physical Education and Recreational Therapy Department.
So what brings you home?
Oh boy, what brought me home? So, I mean, I come home every year, twice a year, and lately I've been coming home even more. I was actually doing a workshop here through the Ministry of Education, working with teachers because I've been, just like in New York, I work with different groups even outside of academia. I did a program at the Performing Arts working with teachers, the principal, AP, pretty much using restorative wellness to create connective cultures. That's a big part of my work. Using the performing arts, using restorative wellness to help people connect. Because a lot of my work is coming from trauma-informed principle. It's based on voice and choice, making sure everybody has voice, making sure everybody knows that they have a choice, and then the third area would be personal narrative. So I came home partly to do that workshop with the performing arts teachers, but then I also came home to heal.
Okay, yeah.
To take a break, to really start working on my restorative wellness playground company.
Yeah. Oh, super. Well, tell us a bit more about, because I was looking, I got a brief look at the document that you had sent to me, and of course you just mentioned two things that keep popping up, and it was voice.
Choice,
and there was another one.
Personal narrative.
There you go. Tell us about the voice part of that.
So voice, we in a world right now where a lot of people really struggle with having a voice. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for my students, because my students are also my teachers, as I teach, I'm also learning from them.
Super.
So that mentality just over the years, just working with college students and just, you know, doing the various work, because I teach stress management, I teach fitness for life, mental, nutritional, physical, also do Afro-Caribbean dance, doing yoga. So doing these health, fitness, dance-related classes always allow me to get to know my students well. So it's one of those things where the restorative wellness is really, I mean, I've been on this journey now for a while, trying to really determine how to define restorative wellness. And over the years, that's why I did the dance education at NYU. Mm-hmm. I was going for the therapy, but I realized that was a little clinical for me. And it was a little bit more Eurocentric for me. And having traveled to countries, you know, in Africa, on the continent of Africa, I got to really explore a lot of their philosophies and a lot of their work. So that's kind of what's been helping me formulate restorative wellness, being able to travel to certain countries and do a lot of that work.
And the choice aspect of it?
And the choice, because it's one thing to have a voice, but then it's also a thing to have a choice. You know, I think we in a world where a lot of people feel like they don't have a choice. And sometimes a choice doesn't mean you have to speak up. Doesn't mean you have to voice your opinion. It can be just having the choice not to say anything because you have introverts. You have people who actually feel very comfortable not saying anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to learn, even though I wanted all my students to speak up, I had to also learn that there are some of my students I don't want to speak up. I'm fine with it. Mm. But I create a lot of activities in the classroom where I do get to hear everybody's voice, but then always understanding that people should always have autonomy. So voice is about autonomy, and having a choice is about autonomy.
Right. I was looking at something that you wrote. When young children seem to say and do whatever pleases them, they are freely using their voice and choice. Adults must always learn to embrace the same sense of autonomy, because many adults have grown out of their ability to exercise their voice and choice due to societal pressures and indoctrination. As a mature, evolving adult, I remind myself that I can pursue the same unlimited freedom by realizing the power that lies within me. Explain that for me.
So I've been thinking a lot during that period when I was writing that article just about, wow, kids are so bold. They just say what they want to say. They, you know, that degree of authenticity, you know, and I'm always trying to go back to that degree of authenticity, because I know that as adults, as we got older, there's a lot of different areas of authority where we feel controlled, like we cannot speak. And I was one of those people who, when I'm dealing with adults who seem, they so outspoken, I'm like, wow, they seem prideful, even almost arrogant. Mm-hmm. And then I had to learn, those are the people who are actually more healthy. Those are the people who are actually very authentic. Mm-hmm. Those are the people who speak their mind and not allow people to control them. So even on my spiritual journey, looking at a lot of scriptures, you know, that talks about humility, and I know in the religious world, we go straight to the scriptures about being prideful. Mm-hmm. But we don't really look at a lot of the things that even the Bible is talking about.
Right.
With Pharisees and teachers of the law, they control people. They, you know, pretty much these things are, you know, they impose all of these traditions and rules, but they themselves don't really follow it. So looking at a child, I have to go back to like, man, I remember when I was free to say and do what I want, and then I became afraid because I was depending on adults. So I'm powerless. So a lot of going into that mindset that you just read is, how do as adults we go back to just feeling free to voice our opinion, realizing we do have a choice? I mean, of course, there are consequences with choice, with voicing a choice. So a lot of it, we have to understand that not everybody can speak out, because there may be consequences, maybe something to do with their job, it may be a relationship situation. Mm-hmm. But the goal is to fight for your voice, to be authentic. But we know being authentic is actually very challenging.
It is. You said that, so you think that there's a point when adults actually lose the ability to do that? I mean, a child that's outspoken, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I might be going in the wrong direction.
Sure.
Here. Is that a thing that adults, the ability to speak, to represent, voice and choice, whatever it is, adults actually lose that ability? And but you have, because there's a point where you say you have to remind yourself of,
yes,
the fact that you do have that same ability. That am I going backwards with this? Or
no, you're right on time. Yeah. Because as you get older, you know, there are so many different rules. We've hit so much obstacles and challenges that we realize, oh my goodness, I can say what I want to say. Mm-hmm. Because if I say what I want to say in certain situations, in certain circumstances, you know, people are not ready for the truth. And I think that's the biggest thing in our world. The truth is actually, I've come to understand, is a painful thing for people. So even though I strive on truth, I strive on vulnerability as a sensitive person, I strive on transparency, I have to keep in mind not everybody's ready for it. And I've gotten in trouble at my job for speaking out a lot of times, you know, because when I say things in a committee or a certain situation, everybody get quiet. It's like, did he just say that?
Well, that sounds a bit like me, right? Because I normally don't, I say very little, you know. I mean, geez, I'm doing a podcast.
No, but I've noticed that about you. I would do that little quick interjection. That's one of the things every time I come home and we may have a conversation. I always appreciate people like yourself who is, fight for your authenticity, you're pretty honest.
Yeah.
Because there are people who are not honest and you don't know how to deal with those individuals because you don't know where they're coming from.
Right.
Yeah. But someone like yourself, you're pretty straightforward.
Hey, take after my grandmother, man. I can say. But so Calvin, tell me how the your program, how does it benefit, how does the dance benefit from it? How does it include the dance? What comes from it, the dance being a part of your wellness program? I mean, educate me on that. Take me.
So you probably know this already, so I'm just going to affirm certain things for you.
Sure.
Something about dance. I know for me growing up in this country, I was a very shy, quiet person. But once I started getting into a little bit of dance and theater, you know, that whole fear as a kid where, you know, they push you, you got to plait the maypole. Okay, we're going to do the quadrille. Okay, you know, that you're going to go up on stage and you're going to do a little presentation. Even from when I was a little kid, the nursery rhymes, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack jump over, and then you have to act it out, even in grade two, grade three. But these were all opportunities that was affording a child a voice, expressing themselves. Dance does that in a major way because whether you do an African dance, jazz, modern ballet, you know, you're posturing, you're opening up yourself. It's a very vulnerable experience. So to be able to dance and release a lot of the tension that we're experiencing internally, we all know that dance is very therapeutic in that sense. So dance became, you know, or not even became, it's just automatically a big part of my work with restorative wellness. Because the most important thing when you're thinking about restorative wellness, or what I think about, is how do you regulate people's nervous system? You know, there's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of tension in our body. So when you're talking to somebody and somebody is upset and they get triggered, you know, how do you make sure you are regulated so that they can feel regulated? So there are so many different things with the restorative work. Dance is just one of them. Another one is playing games. Even though you're getting very chaotic, there are set rules. It brings about some type of democracy, as long as it's being done in a particular way. So again, people regulate their nervous system. They're laughing, they're having fun. They forget about whatever they're going through. So now they're in a space where they can let down their guards and be a little bit more creative and be a little bit more authentic. So dance, just like fitness, it has that component where you're releasing. You know, we have the endorphins, the oxytocin, all these things in our body that we're holding. So when you give an opportunity for people to release, then the walls are broken down, and now there can be a form of communication, even in education, that now you can get the students to really listen because now they're expressing themselves, they're feeling a little bit more confident, you know, their chest is opening up, their spine is lengthening, you know, they start breathing. So depending on how you administer these aspects of restorative wellness, you realize you're creating spaces for people to let down their guards and be authentic.
How does it work for teachers?
Teachers,
because you know we, you know we, as a teacher, I know there's always this pressure that's put on teachers. Nobody, never really thinks about the what is lacking in the life of a teacher. All we are supposed to do is go and educate, not knowing that we do have a life.
Yes,
we do have feelings and emotions. You know, our emotions, it needs to be stimulated. We need to be stimulated physically and emotionally.
Yes.
You know, how does an educator benefit from?
That's a big one.
Because we normally just, because we are normally never in the picture. Our job is always to really take care of somebody else.
Yes. And that's what I just encountered with doing the workshop with the teachers a couple of weeks ago. I think one of the resonating comment was like, wow, very rarely we get to have a workshop where we focus on our own self-care and our self-love for our self-preservation. A lot of times we spend time with teachers and they already spending time, you know, being a psychologist, being an advisor.
Everything.
You play in all of these different roles that's way above our pay scale. So with teachers in those settings is really giving them an opportunity to play the games, to do the meditation, to do the breathing, and then to talk about some of the concerns that they encounter in the classroom, because we can't focus on all these standards and all these tests, you know, if the teachers themselves are not regulated. So a lot of times we're putting teachers, and teachers are not the only profession. I mean, you can go into, I realize, similar in Wall Street and working even in corporate level, like a lot of us are going through situations where we're very triggered. So even going back to the teachers, when you think about they are now taking care of our kids and they doing it for a long period of time. Parents, sometimes they don't even have the time when the kids come home to sit down and have dinner and do the things. So you're doing a lot of extra work that mm-hmm. parents are not able to do. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to create space for the teachers to start voicing a lot of what they're going through. And then for them to play the games and regulate their nervous system, for them to learn meditation. So teaching them practices, personal practice that they can actually use as tools for themselves, but making sure that even in their classrooms that they are creating activities for their students. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, especially for performing teachers, because they're doing some of that really great artistic expressive work, sometimes they get blamed for having fun, and it's like, wow, but that's supposed to be the goal. A part of learning should be like, how can we find ways of learning where it's also fun and regulating at the same time as educational? But we're still in a country where we don't value the arts. So when we do those things that are actually very therapeutic, mm-hmm. then it becomes one of those things where we're fighting against the very thing that the students need. So that's a loaded one right there.
Mm-hmm. It is, definitely. From your perspective, Calvin, tell me, what are your experienced, I'm probably you said this already, but you know, I go over things over and over because I want to get an understanding of it.
Absolutely.
What is your lived experience of the benefits of the arts, dance, again, back to dance, or any aspect of the arts, the ones that you are... are really familiar with, the one that you are involved in?
So let's go from the beginning. So as a child, in order for me to regulate my nervous system, because like I said, there was a lot going on. I'm the youngest of 12, mm-hmm. you know, in my family, and my mom is amazing. A lot of my work with her being a very community building person, how she's wrote plays and skits for the church, you know, how she would go into the hospitals and pray for people or the incarcerated, the groups. You know, she goes in and she does work. She's just that bold type of person. Mm. So when you go back to dance, I would say my coping mechanism became my career. Because while I was navigating my own personal life, you know, the sports was something, even though my mom was very rigid, my older brother and sister had moved out of the house and my mom and dad was going through their own fights and mm-hmm. I had to play that mediator role. Mm-hmm. That same mediator role I've learned to play going into performing, going into teaching. And I noticed that people pushed me in leadership even into church when it was not something I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But I had to come to understand that that mediator role in regulating the nervous system was something that I had learned in the Bahamas as a kid. So what the dance did was it brought me out of my shell because I didn't have a voice. I could speak through my body. When you speak, and that's what a lot of dancers do, the athleticism that you use, you know, the confidence, the posturing. So you may be the most depressed person, but you learn on the outside how to posture your way and elongate your spine and perform. So you really are performing, but the more you perform, that becomes a part of your life. So yeah, you're faking it, but it eventually become a part of you that actually you're not faking it anymore. It's your posturing when you navigate your world.
Yeah.
So dance, just like sports, fitness, games, activities, but dance, because it's much more subtle. If you go into ballet, you see how tall you have to stand, how you elongate, how you posture yourself. Then if you go into African dance and Caribbean, you ground it and you're learning how to use the earth and just elongate and just, you know, the contractions and all the things that you learn to do things with your body that is causing you to, when you go out in the world, you can express your body in a way that most, the average person is not able to. They're very, you know, their tenseness with their shoulders and how they tense, they don't really know how to really open up, and they're holding a lot of tension in your body. So dance give you an opportunity, especially the more versatile you are, you can express yourself in ways. You can hit the, you know, what they call the feminine and the male side. The male side, you could get intense, you can get elegant, you can pretty much access all of these different dynamics in movement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, it seems like I need to get back to the dance.
Well, you're already doing it. And I just go into your performance the other day. I just sit there jaw-dropping because that's a perfect example, Robert. I look at your students and their confidence level, how they attack the stage and they make it look really simple. The way they look left, they look right, they look at you, they look away from you, is all of these different theatrical aspects of dance that I see you with your students. And I know when they walk out of your studio or go into the world, they carry that same mindset.
Well, you know, Mr. Mitchell, Arthur Mitchell, he said, you know, once the thing about dance, once you get yourself into it, once you learn it, it never leaves you. Mm. It stays with you for the rest of your life. And I would say that the holistic value of dance, persons don't understand what it does for the young person.
Yeah.
Goes back to the same thing, you know, the voice and choice. It's all in there.
Yeah.
You know. But I like to think that when I'm teaching dance and when my students leave me or leave the studio, that I would have made my contribution to the world of another beautiful individual. Mm. That's going to affect it in whatever way. They might become doctors, lawyers,
yep,
accountants. And I remember a story of one of my students. she had an interview for a job, and it was a big job, a huge job. I think she's working, it was for a law firm, a big law firm, and she had to, and so she had an interview scheduled that day. And she sat, so she went looking really nice, as I would always suggest to them, you got to look the part, you know. And she said, you know, and she told me the story, and she said, you know, I sat down there, and I was waiting on them. I was sitting at, they escorted me into this boardroom, and I was sitting there by myself waiting for whomever to come in. And then all of a sudden, like, my nerves just left. And then I reflected back to dance and all the things that you told me to own the stage and to do this and to do that. And she said, and then I straightened my back and I crossed my legs.
Yep.
And they came inside and they just really had a time with her. And they go, like, when can you start? You know? So I like to think that a lot of my students, once they leave here, they leave with they are a certain quality of human beings, that we have all invested in, and not only me, and of course their parents, everybody else, and everybody in their life, the village. You know, my parents here at my dance school, they always refer to the village, and all play a part in that, in the development of that child. You know,
and I would also interject, and I'm not telling you something you don't know, but sometimes you say it in a particular way, and the person start affirming. There are things you do in your class with your students that you don't know what they're going through, whether there's domestic violence going on in the home, whether there is abuse, whether there is own personal anxiety, depression. When we come into a class, you know, there's a narrative that we create, and you may give a narrative, this piece is about whatever, but we add to that narrative, and you don't have to know what the student is going through, but we use that opportunity to whatever hurt, sadness, rejection, abandon, anger, whatever we're going through, we dance it out.
Yeah.
So when I see those students of yours performing, I could only imagine, you know, because they're all very different. That's what I also love, different sizes, but they're all amazing, you know.
Yeah.
So you bring something of diversity and inclusion into your work without sometimes realizing it. And when those students connect and communicate with each other, whether it's in the rehearsal, whether it's in the dance classes, but they also are working on their interpersonal skills, but they are also working on their trauma and the stuff that's going on at home. And these are the things that I realized that was happening for me, that when I started navigating the world out there in New York, you know, and then continuing with different dance and theater, I realized, oh my goodness, we're so far beyond the average person.
Yeah.
You know, and I think everybody should be able to have performing, whether you're going for it for a career or not.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mr. Mitchell always also said to, he always used the word, excuse me, that every human being should have reading, writing, and the arts.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so because there is some value to it. There's so much value to the development of the individual, the inner man and the outer man that we could see. It does something to the individual. I just had a student April. We were in New York. My thing was she had reached an age, yet all the talking and everything else and the sharing of experiences, etc. I'm trying to help her to navigate. You know, she's now a certain age and she needs to. We've been doing it this way for a long time. We need to see if this thing is caught on, and so she goes. Took her along, and it was a conversation, kind of daddy-daughter kind of conversation. And so every experience she had, it was a discussion. Because I'm thinking now, I am just adding another block onto her experiences. Because, you know, allowing her to become a stronger person by seeing some of the things that I'm thinking about, and for her testing her ability as a human being, and so, and basically trusting herself.
Yes.
That was the thing, trusting herself. And of course, eventually, she will have to learn to trust herself and also to trust those people who've put stuff into her life as
sure.
well, right?
Yeah.
And so it all comes out in a certain way. And then she goes into these wonderful settings of people, you know, and she's among these kids, and I'm standing and looking at this beautiful young Bahamian girl with all this information that the instructors are clinging to now because they see this child. But that child is, and she got there where she was because of the input of people like yourself, myself, teaching her about her voice.
Yes.
Teaching her, you know, all the things that you, I guess in a way, it's restorative in a certain way, whereas that we're taking everything and bringing it together for her. Now we're trying to tie things together for her, because eventually now she's going to be in college and doing other things, right? But she was in that environment that she was able to now see, and hopefully on return home, gives a lot to think about.
Right.
So she has to think more. Her thinking now needs to be kind of worked out. I don't know if that's making any sense. Whereas that she now realized her voice, her ability.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we would have thought the beginning of a narrative. You know, I'm thinking. So, you know, and I'm trying to show her that everything that society says about the dance is not, you know, it's not, it's more than that.
Yeah.
You know, so I just thought I would say that. I don't know how much that I'm a rambler sometimes.
We get there to get to the point that we're going to. And what you made me think about, a lot of the latest, the more progressive neuroscience, a lot of this work, it's coming out in open, because your traditional therapy in Western culture in particular, you know, people sitting down and just talking, that's no longer working, because even the therapists and psychologists themselves are stressing out, because there's a lot of darkness in the world right now.
Oh, hell yeah, I know.
So the beautiful thing with somatic experience, when you're looking at restorative work, it's the physical aspect. Okay. You know, after you done talk and sit down, you need to move. People who are depressed, what do? They stay in their room. They stay in their places. They don't move. And sedentary lifestyle is extremely difficult right now. A lot of people are dealing with a lot of illnesses from just sitting down the whole time. So when do you get people moving? When do you get people to release the oxytocin and the endorphins and the things going in the body? So even just doing a one-year training, compassion inquiry with Dr. Gabor Maté, I would highly recommend The Myth of Normal. He talks a lot about illnesses that are associated with stress and talking about our world is not normal.
No.
We're very hard on ourselves when we're dealing with how crazy the world is, but it's not normal. And when we realize it's not normal, and then we find ways to regulate our nervous system and also find somatic practices, which dance is a huge one, then there's a lot of releasing going on. So I say that to say again, the power of movement, the power of dance, the power of self-expression, the power of releasing, the power of working on being who you are authentically. And I practice with my students when I started at the second college I was teaching at. I was a little nervous because my classes are non-traditional. I have students in circles. You know, we go into discussion. We play games and activities for the first 2 weeks so that the students can let down their guards and get to know me, get to know each other, even get to know themselves, because there's something powerful about games and play. Play is a huge part of my restorative wellness. Adults, we're so rigid, we stop playing. You know, and we take everything serious. Everything becomes this major argument, this major, you know, conflict, fighting each other. But when you see people play, then their guards go down. You know, they start relaxing. They start listening more to each other. So me being concerned about how non-traditional my teaching was and then getting very high evaluations on my students, then I realized, oh my goodness, they're not checking for me anymore. They're like, no, you good. I mean, it was a little confusing, you know, but your results are positive. So I was even insecure about some of my practices until I put it in and got the results, and then they realized. So that's what started opening me up to doing the restorative workshops with other professors and other individuals.
Yeah.
Because there's something really powerful about the play aspect and the somatic part of it that is very inclusive of dance.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. This is an amazing topic, Calvin. I just wished I knew more about it, but I need to. It just sounds intense, and at the same time, it sounds wonderful. And at the same time, it just it started me thinking.
Sure.
You know, and I understand. I need to find my voice again. I think
you get it.
I don't know.
But I think now using your voice as we all exploring new progressive ways, because our world is not the same and our world is not normal.
No.
But I think the more we start looking at a more empathic mindset, because there is something about just being empathic, I think of a... Let's see what this quote is. It says, one does not have to operate with great malice to do great harm. It's just the absence of empathy and understanding are sufficient. So a lot of times we feel like, well, I'm not hurting nobody. You know, I'm just doing whatever or saying what I need to really say. But there's a degree of mindfulness that needs to happen.
Okay.
You know, because what we do and what we say, it does really affect others. And then that goes hand in hand with another principle with the restorative wellness, is the two fundamental needs of human beings is one, to be connected to your authentic self. And then the second one is to be connected to others, you know, for mutual support and resources.
Absolutely.
But it's very hard to be connected to your authentic self when the world is not ready for who you are.
Yeah.
And then because we care about, you know, relationships right now is very difficult. We're in a very individualistic, selfish society. And rightfully so, because if you don't really take care of yourself, you could end up in the hospital and you can die.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated thing of trying to really take care of yourself and really be authentic. Mm-hmm. Because we're fighting, people don't want you to be the way you are, and well, you doing this, and we're so controlling. We don't know how to really let go and let people be who they are, let ourselves be who we are, let situations be who we are, let it be. you know, because we want to control, because there's so much more stresses in the world that causes more control. But when we learn practices that allow us to just breathe, relax, let it go, you know, do the work, get to know yourself a little bit more, then we start to see, you know, the hope of being able to progress. Because my students will be the first one, "Professor, I hear you, but you're saying be authentic and just be yourself. Do you realize that my mom, if I really was to be who I am, she want me to, the Dominican saying, she want me to cook pineal." And I tell my mom, I get sick when I eat it. But she's like, "How could you get sick? You need to make sure the kids learn how to cook pineal. This is a part of our tradition." And she's like, "Well, Mom, can you just cook it for them or let Grandma cook it? But y'all coming down on me and wanting me to do something that is not who I am. It's not something I like. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with you doing it, but you're forcing me."
Yeah.
You know, and then I remember another student is like, "Yeah, Professor, I'm a twin. And I'm getting upset because they like, why you can't be like the other twin? You know, you so wild and crazy and, you know, and you just need to calm down. Look how she's quiet and reading." Then she finally spoke with her twin, and she's in her 20s now. Mm-hmm. And she said when she spoke with her twin sister, she's like, "Wow, it's funny you said that, because that's what they used to do to me. Why can't you be like your sister? You're so introvert. You're so quiet. Get out there. Be a little bit wild. Take more risks." But you have two people, two twins who love each other. And the world, again, going back to voice and choice, is pushing you to be someone that you're not. And they don't even realize, and loved ones, because they feel like they don't want you to be in a situation where the world is going to hurt you. So you push a child to do something or be something that they're not, mm-hmm. thinking you're protecting them. But what you're doing is you're triggering them and causing more trauma. Yeah.
Wow.
I know it's just loaded now. You get me going into a whole lot of areas.
No, that's fine. That's beautiful. And just like I said, I just basically skimmed over your you know, this thing you sent to me here. Mm-hmm. I find interesting, which I'm going to share this if you don't mind with.
No problem. That was the latest article I did through NYU.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And you talked about the different learning styles. You talked about the pedagogy, you know, of course, you know, mm-hmm. the two learning styles with children.
Yeah, pedagogy versus pedagogy.
Yeah, pedagogy, right. Explain.
So that's not one that's talked about. I had to do a little extra reading on that, because pedagogy is usually a teaching style where they talk mostly with kids. Mm. And they don't talk about pedagogy, but pedagogy is coming more from a place of where you, the adult, is an adult learning. You know, the adult get to have autonomy over what they're being taught, how they're going to really use it. So you're basically guiding an adult, you know, to use the information that you're teaching them the way they would like to use it. So that's something that we don't think about. And when you think about academia was really started with just the elite. I mean, blacks were not allowed to read, and blacks were not allowed to even go to the schools, you know. So when you think about colonization, it's like we're still coming from a place where, you know, this was only for a certain type or a group of people. And even though things have changed, you see what's happening in the U.S., all the books is being banned, and they're finding out that some of the books were, they took all of the information about all the things that blacks did. And even though they talked about it, they still didn't get rid of those books. They still kept the books there. And then the statues, you see, it took a long time for them to start breaking down the statues that was pretty much just promoting white supremacy or people who have been pretty, you know, toxic towards people of color. So we realize now, and I think it's almost a good place where we at, where all these things are coming out in the open. I mean, I'm going to say the word that people don't like to use, but looking at Trump, you know, we can't blame Trump. Like, we allowed this one man, he doesn't have that much power. We allowed him to get in there one way or another. But the good thing, if you're going to look at the good side of it, is these things were always there before he got in there. Mm-hmm. It's just out in the open now. So nobody can be like, "Oh, you're taking this so serious, you're so sensitive." Nobody says that anymore, because it's in your face. Because it hasn't been that long. Yes, Parents lived in those times, you know.
Well, and another way of, I mean, I just reflect, as you're saying that, about the black history.
Yeah.
They did it to us before. The Library of Alexandria.
Oh my goodness, yeah, this is many. You can go on and on.
Okay, you know what I mean? So it is what it is. It's 2025, eh? And we are just dealing with some stuff that we never thought, but some things have always existed.
It is. I'll give you one simple thing. You know, I don't know who all's going to be listening to this podcast, but anyway, it's all good.
That's all right.
But it's like even in the Bronx where I'm at, an associate professor, you know, just coming out of the chair position, but I was the only person of color in my PNB committee, you know, the senior committees that making decisions, you know, for a big part of the campus or the department. And I had to let them know that I'm the only person of color in a committee, and we're in the Bronx, 99% of our students are of color. You know, but all of the other colleagues in my group are white, you know, and I would share that with them. I'm one to address elephants in the room. And they said, okay, yeah, we'll look into it. We'll speak with the lawyer. Nothing never changed. But you have people who don't look like you, and teaching people that look like you and don't look like them are making decisions.
Wow.
But it was different when I was teaching in the wine country in California, because it was mostly a white community. Mm. And even though that was really triggering for me going to therapy for the first time in the wine country, but they knew the things that I was addressing in terms of discrimination. They weren't denying it, but there's still very little one can do when it's a part of the system. So going back to New York and being in the Bronx, that's where it becomes more shocking, even in neighborhoods that is your own, you know, black neighborhood, black people of color neighborhood.
Yeah.
But this just goes to show that in this day and age, that's considered normal. But I'm always jaw-dropping, and I'll be the one to address the elephants in the room. Are we going to do anything about it? You know, so that's why when you look at Gabor Maté and his work on the myth of normal, or when the body says no and trauma-informed diseases, like, it's no surprising that as a people, black, white, blue, green, whatever, that we are in this predicament. And I think hopefully there's going to be a shift with everything going on. It has to get worse before it gets better.
I'm quite sure. You're quite right about that. Well, my brother, this is a lot of stuff. It's very stimulating, but it's the start.
Sure.
And I know that at some point in time, we're going to talk a bit more, but we're not finished.
Sure.
this here has opened another portal of thinking for me, basically. It is information, actually.
Sure.
And so it has piqued my curiosity. And so I wish to learn more about what it is that you do. And possibly at some point in time, we can probably do another, once I get a better understanding what this is all about. I'm learning. As you speak to me, I am learning. I learn every day.
I'm learning in this conversation
right.
as well.
You know, so I think you stop that process when you die.
Yes.
You know, but
absolutely.
At least at the end of the day, as my pastor used to say, Miles Monroe, he talked about dying empty.
Okay.
Well, that is
ooh, that's a big one.
yeah. It has to happen, you know.
Yes.
And he always brought intimate. He just said the most unique stuff, man. And one of the things he said, and he referred to the graveyard as being the richest place on earth.
Mm.
And I couldn't figure that out. But in there lies people who symphonies that were not ever written, and
yes.
books that were never written, and probably cures that never came into habit, you know. So
that goes to the personal narrative part, the third part, voice, choice, and then personal narrative.
So that's what I want to talk about now.
Yes.
Just expand a bit more on personal narrative.
So when you look at personal narrative and you tie that into voice and choice, it's always the people who speak out that you get to hear their narrative, but it's always the quiet ones. You don't know what they're thinking.
Right.
And sometimes, like a lot of introverts, they really take a lot of notes, and we really need to hear from the people who you don't hear from.
Right.
So personal narrative is you creating spaces where everyone gets to have a voice and you get to hear the personal narrative. That's why I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing, because you're bringing people into these podcasts And for someone like myself who came come back and forth in the Bahamas but not living here, I'm probably spending a lot more time here now because of the work I want to do with culture, you know, with education, with dance, with community. But I think we need to start hearing those people in the Bahamas who's out there, even in the streets. What are their voices? What are they thinking about their experience living in this country, which is their country?
Do you think Bahamians really care about that, man?
Whether they care or not is something most people stop when they hear a story. Stories are powerful.
I know they are.
So when they're given a platform, the government, Bahamians in general, because we're all in this survival, this mode, that we don't really get a chance to pause and hear these people's story. But I think there's so many different situations, and that's what I want to do with Murray Star to Wellness Playground. How do we create spaces all over this island? You know, even the out island. Because if I didn't have those stories, I don't know how I would really survive.
Right.
You know, because I'm constantly collecting stories, you know, so that I can understand more about myself. So the powerful thing about stories is we're not in a vacuum. You're not an island owned by yourself.
Right.
You have to interact with people, and that's why creating safe spaces where people can speak, or that's where we all can grow. Mm-hmm. But I think we're stagnant in our growth because there's only certain people you hear all the time.
And so how we're stagnant in our growth, and how are we going to rectify that, or how are we going to...
I think by creating spaces in the school, creating spaces in the community, creating spaces in the church, for politics, politicians, you know, creating spaces, you know, that in the community where we can start finding out what people are thinking. But I think if we don't start dealing with the compassion and the empathy, which start making people feel valued and feeling like a sense of belonging, then we're not going to really solve a lot of the problems and even be able to rich culture that we have, like I talk about. I don't know if I would have survived if I didn't have all of those ring plays. Ian Strawn, I remember Nicola Battle, she was the one. She doesn't know me well, but when I reached out to her years ago, she's like, everything you're talking about, you may want to watch the video, Show Me Emotion by Ian Strawn. She spoke with him. He gave me the video. I use it at NYU for my classes. I use it at Bronx Community College. But the discussion that they created in just that documentary alone was so powerful to talk about the politics, the religion, and what is hindering us from losing our culture. So you have people on this island, you know, very smart, brilliant people. They've been doing the work, but it's not out in the open. And we don't continue the conversation. And I think when we get to those individuals, these are examples of individuals, if they have opportunity, we can create circles throughout the community where we can have those conversations. But the problem is these things are very isolated. They're in silos. So I think the Bahamas have far too much silos. When you start breaking the silos and bringing people together, even like yourself, you know, you have a lot of history. Carol, I mean, all of you guys, there's so much history that I'm almost afraid if you guys pass and we don't get to connect, you know, then we are in a really bad place in this country. We call it tourism. I don't even know my friends when they hear you from the Bahamas, and I like to tell them what you would have gotten years ago. You may not get the fire dance and the limbo and the quadrille and the plat, but you know, we need to figure out how to bring those things back.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of individuals, but they having separate conversations.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about it. I don't know. I don't know if that's a genetic fault. As a Bahamian, we tend not to work well together. I'm sorry I have to say that. And I don't know if that's a black thing, or I don't know if it's a Caribbean thing, but I know here where I am positioned, I know that,
right.
You know, and so, I mean, I've tried on many occasions to try and pull people together, but I guess it's not the time. Anytime something doesn't work, I said it's probably not the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to come together, and there's so much that we can teach the world. There's so much that's here in this country that we could share. I don't know. But.
And I have quite a bit of thoughts on it, but I know that it takes time, which you're alluding to, because I have to keep in mind, even though I'm coming home all the time, I'm still like this one. I almost want to call a name, but I love her. I love people who are outspoken, because you're like, well, Kelvin, you know we're looking at you like an expat.
Yeah.
And then she would, but I love it because she's right. It takes time to build trust. We want to move fast. Oh, we have all this stuff. I can't come here with ideas and expect like I'm going to, you know, because it's not about coming up with all the ideas and getting to implement it. It's about getting to know people. It's getting to live with people. It's getting to talk with people. These things take time. So I have quite a bit of thoughts on how that can be done and what I've been doing over the last couple of years. And now where I'm really focusing on it because I really care about this country. I know things that I am doing that would start building without being intrusive, because that's the thing you don't want to do.
Right.
You know, if I'm talking about voice and choice, you can't come here and think you're going to have the voice.
Right.
You know, there are people who have been here for a long time. So, but I think learning in terms of how to build relationships and help break down the silos so that people connect, because they have the answers. We have the answers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not coming here with answers. I'm coming here with a restorative wellness practice to bring people together so that we can discuss, you know, the answers, because we know the answers. But the two things I think hinders it, you know, a lot of the trauma and triggering that's going on with us is the one thing that hinders it. And the second thing, this island is so small. It's so rich. Everybody knows what everybody is doing.
Yeah,
and the minute you start to do something, it can be sabotaged right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're correct with that. Yeah. Well, Kelvin, this has been an education for me. It's
likewise.
I just feel that there's still so much more that I want to talk about, and you know, I haven't reached that stage in podcasts yet where people are going to sit and listen to 2 hours of podcasts.
Yes. Right? I feel you.
So I'm
smart,
not,
man.
Yeah, I'm not like those guys out there. You know, the Howard Sterns
and even them, and our attention span is
The rest of those people can hold people for so. But we need to do this again. And like I said, once I get a better grasp of what it is that, you know, because I know, I think from just being a person that just with an open mind and able to deduce certain things, I understand where, you know, you know what you're talking about. I see it. I appreciate it. It's necessary. I just think it's wonderful. I think it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful approach to try, you know, making our environment and individuals better people, you know, and helping us to grow, you know, in certain ways. And I see many branches of your trees, man. I see many branches of your tree. And so I would like to learn some of those things.
And I can send you key videos and even little writings, because this stuff is becoming more popular in neuroscience.
Just a whole lot of things, you know, because I have these conversations with my students sometimes. I talk about things that I don't know anything about. I must be honest. I learn. I learn as a teacher many years ago. Sometimes students ask some questions that you don't have answers for, right?
I love it.
And I just throw it back on them. I go like, listen, you know, tell you what, you go.
Right.
I'm sorry, students that I've taught in the past, but
I do the same thing. I stop the class and I'd be like, oh, this is great. I'm not sure, but can you talk a little bit more about that? And then I make it into a class discussion.
Oh, there you go.
It's a beautiful
thing. It works, man. And so you get, you know, as a matter of fact, that's how my book was actually done.
Oh, beautiful.
Kind of, sort of. And as a matter of fact, for those who don't know, I do have a book that was released in 2023. It's called Profiles of Bahamian Dance.
Can't wait to get it.
The Dance and the Dancers. Yes. And it was just my first attempt at something. And it started with a student.
Mm-hmm.
It actually started with a student. I sent them out on research to do some research work, and they weren't able to find it. And the people at the archives just sent them back. So I tell your teacher.
Right.
And so
bring it on.
It started that way, and then about it just worked so funny. It's like about 2 weeks later, I walked into Island FM, and there's Patty Roker, and she pulls me to the side. She says, how come nobody ever done a book on dance?
Yes.
And I go like, well, I don't know. It wouldn't be me, because I ain't a writer. But, you know, that's how that process starts.
But that's how most writers begin, because people come to you because they know you have information.
Yeah. But the fact that, you know, it was a situation, it started through a student at first, you know. So those students there to teach us as well. And I really appreciate, I've appreciated all the students that I've taught over the past 40 years. And, you know, they've helped me to grow as well, you know.
Yes.
But Kelvin, this is wonderful, man. It's good always to have you when you come home. And like you, man, I love this country. People always ask me, how come you never move back to the United States? I thought of it. I've had many opportunities too, but I just love it here in this Bahamas. I just love it. And it just, I'm a Bahamian. And why am I going to be out there helping somebody else build their country? I need to come and help it build my own. So I'm here, you know, so that's been my struggle for years, trying to build my
country.
Well,
thank you. Thank you for being resilient, because as I'm coming home more, you are one of those that I know I'm going to be connecting to, because I want the people who are going to be real. I want the people who are going to, you know, that we can speak freely, you know. So I appreciate your resilience, and thank you for persevering.
It's been a task, but
I'm sure
it's awesome. But Kelvin, it's been amazing, and it's just nice having you doing this podcast today. And like I said, you know, this podcast, at the end of the day, at the end of this podcast, I hope that you will be much smarter and you would have learned something, because I know I definitely did. And to also remind you that this podcast is coming from Nassau, Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We love life, and we do life. We do it really well here, you know, and we have lots to share. Our culture is rich as heck. And, you know, of course, we got a lot of work to do still, but we're going to get it done. And I'm just always proud to have another Bahamian who's doing something overseas, as we say, foreign, as we say here in the Bahamas, and can come home and who could share, and who's willing to actually come back and make a contribution. Kelvin, is there anything that you want to say before we wrap up?
Nothing for now, except, like I said, I'm praying a lot for this country, because Bahamas is not the only country going through stuff. This is a global problem that we're talking about here, but I think because of how rich our culture is, my big prayer is all of that stuff, all that richness that I grew up with, that I don't see as much anymore, that we can slowly start figuring out how to bring that back. Because I think something simple is not complicated, but we know it's complicated to break through systems and silos. But
there you go.
So that's my prayer and my hope.
Well, great, man. I'm with you on that, man. I'm with you. I'm totally agreement. Well, thank you for listening. And if you're hearing this podcast, I really appreciate you, man. I really appreciate you. And there's some more to come. Some more to come. So right now, Kelvin, thank you so much. And you're listening to Tea and Talk. You're listening to the podcast, Tea and Talk.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.